versus the Commonwealth.
Good morning again, Your Honors.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to you. May it please the court, opposing counsel, I'm pleased to be here representing Joshua Lillard on our appeal from a decision from the Circuit Court of Spotsylvania County, wherein Mr. Lillard was found guilty of reckless driving.
Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
If I could be notified of 5 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Please, thank you for asking. We're here to talk about a case that has some facts, to be perfectly honest, that on some level may defy a certain level of belief. But at the same time, I think we're here arguing on behalf of the fact that it does not extend beyond the possibility of reasonable doubt and a reasonable hypothesis of innocence. The facts of this case have David and Susan Fanfarillo shopping in the Fredericksburg area on August 28, 2013. When they leave the Fredericksburg area, they're leaving for their home south of town and on Interstate 95 headed southbound. In doing so, they make observations that there's a slight drizzle of rain during the day, and because of that, you can accommodate or make accommodation for the traffic in that area. It's probably through Richmond here that there's a bit of an accordion effect sometimes, and so there's a slight congestion, while not heavy congestion, if you will, that I believe came
out. Excuse me, counsel, may I ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am.
I have two questions. The first one is, you don't argue, do you, that the mere fact that the trial court acquitted your client of the felony of hit and run as a matter of law should have resulted in him being acquitted of this charge, do you?
No, ma'am, but I do try and piggyback the reasoning that I believe the court had and the way I believe the facts fell out in the opinion of the court that reasons into why he should not have been found guilty of reasonable doubt.
Knowledge was a big factor in that finding, wasn't it?
It was.
And all right, my next question is this. Isn't the evidence or the physical evidence in this case pretty clear and undisputed that there was damage to the right front of the truck and the left side of the car?
Yes, ma'am.
And well, how in the world do you get that result if the appellant was not traveling to the left of the car, i.e. in the left lane?
Well, I think that's, if I could splice the last comment you just made, is I don't think we're in dispute over the fact that the tractor trailer was to the left of the vehicle, but we do dispute whether the tractor trailer was in the left lane of travel. We believe that the evidence shows that the appellant was in the center lane of travel. Now, I know that the Commonwealth, in its opposition to my brief, pointed out that specifically the trooper said the tractor trailer was in the left lane, but if I could point out some discrepancies in the record from that, the trooper testified that he did come to a conclusion it was in the left lane, but in the process of that, and I can't recall specifically whether it's through cross-examination, but certainly through his testimony, he said that he wasn't the actual observer of the accident. Everybody can understand that plainly.
But one way or the other, didn't the truck have to be to the left of the car?
Yes, ma'am. I'm not disputing that at all.
So either the truck trailer was in the left lane and the car was in the center lane, or the truck was in the center lane and the car was in the right lane.
Which is our contention.
And didn't all of the witnesses, perhaps except for the defendant, testify that the car was in the center lane?
Well, there was slight reference to another witness that was not present in court in cross-examination of the trooper. There was another trooper that we made reference, alluded to the idea that there was some other observation of the tractor trailer in the center lane. And going back to what I wanted to point out to the court was that in through testimony, he said he didn't observe the accident, but Trooper Hindenlang also said that he couldn't pinpoint where the accident actually occurred because there was no physical evidence. There's no fiberglass, there's no yaw marks, there's no glass.
I agree, but you do have the paint and the damage.
Oh, I'm not, and we're not able to dispute that. We're not disputing that the accident occurred. Okay, If I could have just one moment, he went on to say under cross-examination that he believed the witnesses when he said that they said the tractor trailer was in the left lane. He believes the witnesses when he saw that the tractor trailer was said to be in the center lane. And in that right there, I think there's a discrepancy in the ability of the officer to do what he did, and that was he offered expert testimony. So in that, without any physical evidence, without any ability to pinpoint where the accident occurred, he's doing nothing more than the court ultimately did, which was review the evidence as presented by the witnesses. So I believe in some level you can essentially nullify the evidence presented by the trooper as far as expertise and where the vehicles were when the accident occurred. There's no evidence of that. In the Fanfarillo's testimony, they talk about what happened to them as a result of the tractor-trailer hitting them. But they don't talk about, and they represent that they were in the center lane, to be fair. I apologize for that. But they don't talk about how far the tractor-trailer traveled or its moment of impact. There's some things that are missing at that moment of impact, which we believe, with the explanation offered by the defendant, and certainly the behavior of the defendant after the accident is very important to our case. Because,
doesn't that violate the standard of review? Don't we have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth?
You do, yes, ma'am.
All right.
And we have to find that the court was plainly wrong in its decision here today. Absolutely. And I guess you've thrown me there. The part of this is that if the defendant, the court had to come to the conclusion that the explanation offered by Mr. Lillard when the trooper approached him at that very next truck stop. We're talking the second exit after the accident occurred, one of the most popular truck locations. It's got three truck stops. It's got truck car wash. It's got to be a place these guys look for. So he's not hiding. And Trooper Hindenling's testimony is all about how calm he is, how we're going around the car. And I don't mean to do Mr. Lillard, but he's kind of like, yeah, that looks like I hit something. And he doesn't know he's doing it. But it's all that was found so credible.
That was favorable to him in the not guilty verdict on the hit and run. That the standard and the criteria for the reckless driving are vastly different. It is driving behavior.
And maybe that's where
the crux of the case here.
The manner and circumstances of the drive. Yes, ma'am. And maybe that's why I'm coming back to where I started with you, and that I think the ruling of the court had to take into consideration all of those aspects of the investigation with the trooper at the truck stop. You tie that credibility, you tie that veracity that was found to his version of the events is what I am suggesting. Not that we take it in the light most favorable, but maybe I am to some extent. But certainly the strongest evidence comes in through the trooper. And as I pointed out, the trooper's wishy-washy at best. He wants to say that the Commonwealth wants to say that they were in the left lane, but in reality, when you examine his complete testimony, he's wishy-washy. He doesn't know where the accident happened. And to our point, the accident could very well have occurred with the Fanfarillos coming from the left lane into the center lane. The only thing that we can truly pull out of the record that is agreed upon and undisputed is that, as you've already pointed out, the car was struck in the left rear quarter panel and that there were marks on the sides and in front of the tractor trailer. Other than that, there's no physical evidence, there's no actual indication as to manner and circumstances of driving at the time of the accident. So we'd ask the court.
Well, there was testimony, I believe, by the appellant himself that he had a blind spot in his mirror. So he's moving from one lane to the other in the midst of a rainstorm at the high speed, I won't say exceeding the speed limit, the high speed on a interstate highway, heavily traveled interstate highway, making a move with a blind spot.
Yes, ma'am. Well, there's a blind spot, but again, that's taken into consideration that the Commonwealth's strongest witness doesn't have an idea where they were, and I appreciate Your Honor's taking the perspective that he's coming from the left lane, but I don't think that's what the trooper ultimately said. I think the Fanfarillos who were involved in the accident tried to replicate that, but I think there's issues.
Well, for your position to be correct, he'd have to be in the center lane, and the Commonwealth witness would have to have been moving from the right lane to the center lane.
Yes, ma'am. And that's what we believe the other evidence, if we tail on.
But the trial court didn't find that, did he?
The trial court found that he should have known that the accident occurred, which is another part of the issue that we have.
For the felon, for the hit and run.
Well, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. But he found, I believe that he used that reasoning to come to its ruling conclusion on the misdemeanor of reckless driving, that he should have known the accident occurred, therefore he was guilty of reckless driving, is what I believe the court's conclusion was.
That's because a motorist, regardless of what they're driving, has a duty to maintain an adequate lookout. You can't have, especially knowing that you have a blind spot, you're driving an 18-wheeler down the highway,
you've got to be cognizant of what's happening around you.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, there's a real problem.
If we were to reverse this thing, we'd be saying, well, 18-wheelers have blind spots, and so if you run into something, oh, well, that's a fact of life. I mean, that doesn't sound right.
Well, I think that's where I want to bring back to Powers for just a moment and point out that the court there quotes that the law does not impose the duty upon a driver to keep his automobile under complete control at all times, and address that at some point wherein certainly the factors in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth in this circumstance are not great. But at the same time, you have Mr. Lillard maintaining full control. All the evidence is he was in the center lane. There was no braking. There was no swerving of any kind. There was no indication of erratic driving behavior.
You say all the evidence he was in the center lane. That's not accurate. In the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, that is not an accurate statement.
Well, I would respectfully disagree that I believe Mr. Rosefall, who was the driver of the SUV, and there was... there was testimony from maybe Mr. Fanferillo as well. When they're watching the tractor trailer pull off, I specifically asked them questions about the driving behavior and how it was it bouncing? Was it swerving? Did you see the brake lights come on? Did you see any of that behavior? So I did ask those questions. That is in the record.
But if one witness testified to the contrary, the trial court could, and I would argue, say, did rely on the evidence that the tractor trailer moved into the other lane.
And certainly that's
and if
the
that, if that evidence is there, what can we do about it?
Well, you're in that rebuttal time, just so you're aware.
I guess that's the point where we don't believe that the Commonwealth's evidence, as presented, even in the light most favorable today, rises to that level of beyond a reasonable doubt.
Thank you.
Ms. Harris.
Good morning. May it please the court. Susan Harris for the Commonwealth. The problem with the argument presented by the defendant is that the points that he urges are misplaced on appeal. The standard of review is well settled in cases like this, and that is it's viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. And findings of fact are entitled to deference by this court. And as I say, what he's stuck with is that the trier of fact, it was a bench trial, determined that the defendant was in the left-hand lane and that the sequence of events happened just as they were described by the trooper. And that's a finding of fact, and he's stuck with it. And, as we've argued on brief, consistent with that standard of review, the record amply supports the trial judge's conclusion that Lillard drove recklessly. The evidence established that Lillard was in the left lane when he drove to the center lane, clipping the Fanferello Volvo at the back of the driver's side. And although he denied being in the left lane because he acknowledged it was a legal and an easy ticket under 46.2.803.1, the trial judge rejected that portion of his testimony and was entitled to find that he was lying to conceal his guilt.
Counsel, could you tell me the facts as the Commonwealth sees them as to why this is reckless as opposed to the mere happening of an accident?
It's not like Powers at all. Powers is where that principle comes from. Powers was a case where the only person that was a witness to the events was Powers. There was no indication that his story was, he said that he was run off the road. And that was about all that he could offer. And so that was what the Commonwealth was left with, the mere happening of an accident. In this case, that's not like that. There's much more than a mere happening of an accident. You have physical evidence, as you observed, between the Fanferello Volvo and the bumper of the truck, the tractor-trailer truck. The evidence by both the Volvo and the owner of the SUV about the events after this chain of events was started by the by Lillard, and you also have Lillard's own testimony, which to me was very telling. I mean, he acknowledges that he had a blind spot, you know, and he went to a lot of trouble to demonstrate that to the court, that he couldn't see. He said on Joint Appendix page 177, he admitted he could see absolutely nothing when another car was alongside him in that particular spot. Yet he drives illegally in that, which is what the trial court found. He was illegally in that left-hand lane. He knew he could see nothing over on that other side where the Volvo was, and the Fanfarellos were obviously, their testimony was credible, that they were found to be credible, that they were in the center lane. And he just moves right over and, you know, that's okay. So he was on notice. He was on notice that, like in the Blevins case, he was on notice that there was a problem with his truck that could interfere with his ability to control the truck. You know, he was on notice that he should not be driving. He was a commercial rig. He should not be in that left-hand lane. In fact, it was a violation of the law. And he, you know, he was indifferent, recklessly imparts a disregard for the consequences of his act and indifference to the safety of life, limb, or property. And as we argued on brief, I think the evidence easily proved his culpability. And I would ask, unless there are questions, I would ask that you affirm the lower court.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harris. Mr. Hicks?
In brief, I would only point out that certainly we've covered the position of the Commonwealth and how this fell out, but the Commonwealth point outs Blevins versus Commonwealth, which speaks to certain factors that that can be apparent in reckless driving cases, and they're certainly not exclusive, excuse me, but erratic driving, likelihood of injury to others, there's none of that. The likelihood of injury, I appreciate the blind spot argument, but there's that was in reference, well, in more to the hit and run situation, but it wasn't in reference to his ability to change lanes properly. Lack of control of the vehicle. Again, I've attempted to point out parts of the record that indicate that he had full, complete control of the vehicle. Excessive the speed limit. The testimony in the
Counsel,
record.
Doesn't the damage to the truck, in and of itself, show he didn't have control of the vehicle?
I guess that's where I'm firmly in Mr. Lillard's camp, in the sense that if I believe that he were in the center lane and he maintained that without any braking or swerving or anything else, I can't think of any more control he could have with the vehicle with all this other thing.
But happened. You wouldn't have damage.
But he maintained control of his vehicle throughout, I guess, is a difference of the approach on the definition that we have here, in the sense that I think that he did maintain complete control, and approaching it from the sense that the court ruled that he was coming from the left lane, appreciating your honors putting me in the right direction.
That was the Volvo failed to maintain control.
Well, that's certainly our position, and I can get into other things.
And there's evidence of that where?
Well, I think in the same place that I believe there may be some evidence for the trailer.
Fair, counsel.
But I do appreciate my opportunity to be here before you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.